Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
And welcome into Patriots Playbook 4. A Wednesday, hump day, on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you for the next couple of hours. And, of course, the Patriots are working their way toward the home opener. Here it is, week 3 in the NFL season. We finally have a home game here in the friendly confines, as the saying goes, of Gillette Stadium. And the Oakland Raiders are the opponent this Sunday for a 1 o'clock kickoff. I don't have too many more 1 o'clock kickoffs, I don't think, this year. This is going to be one of those rare events, I think, overall. So today we'll turn the page a little bit. Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black, the name of the publication is, again, Kev, Silver and Black Review?
Silver and Black Illustrated.
Illustrated, thank you. I knew that because I was looking at it this morning. He's going to join us in the second hour of the program, and we'll start kind of taking down the Raiders a little bit. Along the lines of what Andy was just saying, you know, this is a team that is 0-2. This is a team that is beginning an 11-day road trip this weekend, not only because they're coming here, but immediately following here, they go to London to play the Miami Dolphins. So they got back-to-back on the road against AFC East teams.
Didn't they open it in New York against the Jets? And that's another big, long trip for them. Awful trips.
I got to tell you, that this is as big a bite in the schedule as I think I've seen any team take for quite some time.
You have your opening weekend, you travel all the way to New York, then all the way back, then you have one home game, then you travel all the way back across the country, then you go across the Atlantic.
Yeah. You start at New York, as you said. Then you lose to the Houston Texans. You get whacked in your home opener last Sunday. Now you got to come back east, and you're going to stay east, and then you finally have an open date. I looked at their schedule at first glance. I'm like, wow, the Raiders have an open date in the fifth week of the season. I'm like, that's incredibly early.
They'll need it.
Sucks to be them, but yeah, they're going to need it. And I think as you look at this, you can see where this team could easily be 0-4 and really sucking wind before they have two games home against San Diego and Arizona at the end of the month. Now, technically, they are the home team for the game against Miami. I don't know how you figure that out, but Oakland is the home team for the Miami game in London in a couple of weeks. So they've got that to look forward to, I suppose. Listen, that's a tough haul. The Patriots have to concern themselves with a team right now that, you know, not only played the Jets well but lost, although they did get beat up on the ground by the Jets. You know, there were some bright spots, frankly, against the Texans. And then, you know, the Texans, you know, slowly pulled away. Last week against Oakland. Excuse me, against the Houston Texans. James Jones, 9 passes that he caught for 112 yards. Oakland wide receiver. Got a touchdown. His first 100-yard receiving performance as a Raider. The rookie quarterback, Derek Carr, in his second start, threw for 263. 27-42, one touchdown, had 2 picks. And Darren McFadden, who to me has got to be the one worrisome spot for the Patriots defensively, certainly a worrisome spot. 68-yard total offense, 1 rushing touchdown. So just in brief, that's where the Raiders stand coming into the game. The Raiders overall through 2 weeks are next to last in the NFL in total offense. They're next to last in rushing offense. In other words, 31st out of 32 teams. And they are next to last on third down offensive efficiency. They're converting on under 24% of their third down chances. Seems to be playing right into the Patriots defense's hands, don't you think? Well, flip it around. Because, and I think this is the one of the weirdest things that I've seen about the Raiders as you begin to kind of look at them this week and prepare for the game on Sunday. The Raiders are tied for the lead in the NFL in fourth down offensive percentage and in red zone percentage. They're 100% in both areas. They're 4 for 4 in the red zone. So when they get in the red zone, four times they've been there in 2 weeks, but they've scored 4 touchdowns every time they've been in the red zone. Whatever it is, I don't know. Guess you got to keep them outside the 20-yard line. Defensively, the Raiders are dead last in the NFL in rush defense. They are allowing opponents to rush for an even 200 yards per game. Now, to me, you know, as you figure out, okay, how are the Patriots going to attack Oakland? Well, if a team has given up 400 yards in 2 games on the ground, aren't you at least going to take a look at the ground game? Now, it may very well be that Oakland adjusts, does some things that the Patriots aren't ready for, and the Patriots will probably plan for such. But aren't you at least going to think about attacking a defense that apparently is having a hard time stopping the run? And I know there's so much angst going on, apparently, amongst a lot of Patriots fans about Tom Brady not finding his secondary targets. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. Heard this on talk shows, read this on blogs, you know, read this on in media articles throughout the internet over how, you know, there seems to be too much relying on Julian Edelman, not enough, you know, spreading the ball around. Hey, Amendola was open. Well, you got to understand, again, let me reiterate. They played with a heavy package this last week in an effort to control the line of scrimmage and create a mindset and a tone against Minnesota. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to back off from that and start winging the football against the Raiders. In fact, that kind of flies in the face of what you really should do. You want to be balanced anywhere you go. Any time out you play, you want to be balanced. And I'm sure as the coaching staff looks at the film of the Raiders, they're going to see that, well, these guys, you know, are not strong here, they're not strong there, they give up a lot on the run. So why would you eliminate the run from your offensive package? And my reasoning behind that is you wouldn't. Why would you? You wouldn't. You want to run the ball. Stephen Ridley, Shane Vereen, Brandon Bolden, whomever. You want to run the ball. You definitely want to use the run. You want to continue some of that, I believe, some of that momentum that you tried to build in, you know, creating a presence on the line of scrimmage and dominate what you can in the trenches. You want to establish a tone and a tempo. And I think we all realize that the Patriots' best passing offense certainly has got to come from play action. So in order to play act, then you got to have the running game to start. So I'm not saying that, you know, the Patriots have to, you know, go no huddle and wing it down the field in an effort to get the ball or throw the ball the way of Danny Amendola or at least, you know, give Brandon LaFell a chance to catch it or what about Tim Wright? What are we going to, how are we going to get him worked into the offense? Ah, baloney. These guys are all here for a reason. These guys are all here because you need DEPTH, depth. And if Julian Edelman's open, that's who Tom Brady's going to throw to. He said today earlier, in case you missed it here at the stadium in his press conference, that, you know, he has all the confidence in the world in Amendola. No reason to think otherwise. But Amendola hasn't been, you know, targeted because of, well, certainly the aforementioned reasons. A, they've been concentrating on winning the line of scrimmage, which, as we all know, they didn't do against Miami, and it resulted in a loss. And then they went with a heavy package last week. In other words, basically one wide out and two tight ends, or they went with the six tackle line, which frankly I love. I think that's great. By the way, Kevin, it means less work for me because the official on the field always has to say, number 77 is an eligible receiver. And so I have no chance to get in the down and distance before a game. No shot. I got no problem with that. That means, all right, we're going heavy here. And if that means, you know, you pull in a guy like that for an extra blocker to, you know, make sure that you're whacking the other guy in the mouth, and then that's what you got to do. And I frankly think that's a strong idea, and it's worked. It worked last week. It could probably work again this week. So I don't see any reason that you have to, you know, throw it all out, start from scratch, and start targeting, you know, Danny Amendola and Kenrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson and Tim Wright and anybody else that has been underutilized, and I put quotes around that, underutilized by Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels and the Patriots offense. I'm not buying it. Now, again, come back to me in about a month after we've had a few games and probably different teams and different game plans and different looks, and then we'll see where we are. And then let's look at targets, and then let's look at receptions. Targets first, then receptions, because once you're targeted, obviously you want to catch the ball. But all I'm saying is that these guys have not been a real viable or an active part. That's probably a better word to use. An active part of the game plan. They threw the game plan out the window against Miami because the second half was so abysmal. I mean, the second half against Miami was a brain cramp to end all brain cramps. We haven't seen a Patriots team have that type of a bad performance in what, almost 100 games. I think that's what it was. It's been 8 or 9 years. So it had been a long time before we had seen a Patriots team dominated like that in one half of football. And so everything gets thrown out the window. Everything. So they decide, all right, we got to get back to basics. We're going to pound, 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 pound. We're going to win the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Pound, pound, pound. And it worked. And especially on the other side of the football, it freed up Chandler Jones to go have an outstanding game. Rob Ninkovich looked like his old self. You know, Jamie Collins is back at practice this week, so hopefully if he's back in the field, that gives him a chance to fly around a little bit more this week. You know, I'm feeling pretty good about the opportunity this week to continue the process. You don't want this team to look like it's mid-season form in week three. As much as we'd all like to see it, I suppose, I don't think you really want that, and I'm not even sure the guys down the hallway and out on the practice field want that. I'm not sure. I think they want to take steps forward. Every week they want to get a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And I think this is the week to do that. And when you take a look at what Oakland does and does not do well, clearly part of your game plan is going to be, we got to run the ball. These guys are dead stinking last. Plus, Oakland is dead last or next to last in rush offense. So you're going to want to win the line of scrimmage against the Raiders. Make Oakland one-dimensional. And again, you got a rookie quarterback in Derek Carr who's going to get his third career start this week. And I think we do know, and I think you should know if you follow this football team for any length of time, how well the Patriots usually fare against rookies. You know, when Bill Belichick gets a chance to game plan against a rookie for the very first time. I'm sure there's going to be a few things in there that Derek Carr has not seen before. Patriots defense picked off Matt Castle, who probably knows the Patriots as well as anybody. They picked him off 4 times last week. 4 times. Got to him 6 times and sacked him. That's got to be where the Patriots are thinking. Let's put pressure on the rookie. Let's show him some things. You know, let's take something away so we know what's coming. That's the mantra. That's what you do. So at least initially, that's what I'm thinking the Raiders are going to do. This will be the 31st meeting all time between Oakland and New England. 31st all time? Actually, no, I take that back. I lied. Looks like it is, let's see, 17 and 15, 30, 34th meeting. 34th meeting all time because I didn't add the postseason in there. Patriots won 17, Oakland's won 15. There has been one tie. New England has won the last 3 games in the series with Oakland, including the last time the two teams played here in New England, which was September the 8th of 2005. So it's been, what, almost now 9 years since Oakland has played here, and the Patriots won 30-20 that day. Patriots won the last two times they have met. They won in 2008 in December in Oakland, 49-26, and then they won 3 years ago in their last meeting in Oakland on an October Sunday. It was 31-19, last time these two teams played. The last time Oakland won in New England, 20 years ago, 20 years ago, in 1994, October the 9th, 94, the Raiders defeated the Patriots 17-14 at Old Foxborough Stadium. I was here that day. I remember that day, actually. So, 5 meetings in the last 20 years, and the Patriots have won 3 of them, including the last 3 in a row to take the series lead. So that was that's as far as the series goes between the two teams. Of course, now in the way that the NFL schedule is set up, you play a team once every 4 years and you visit them, or they come to your place once every 8 years. That's how basically it works. Couple of, we are going to jump more into the Raiders in the second hour of the program. As I mentioned, Mike Wagaman from Silver and Black Illustrated is going to join us to talk about the Raiders. Eric Scalavino will join us as soon as he's done in the locker room, as the interview session is underway with the players right as we speak. So we'll get a feel for the locker room coming up in a little bit. In the meantime, a couple of questions that I want to throw out to you from news that has come about over the course of the last couple of days anyway. I don't know if you heard this. I saw this on WEEI.com, and I think NFL.com has got it up as well. But the preliminary nominees for the 2015 class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame was revealed late yesterday after we were done with our program on Tuesday. And the nominees who made the list of 113 players, 113 nominees. There were 99 players, 14 coaches. And again, this will be whittled down. But there are 113 total nominees for next year. And those that have New England ties, you've got Willie McGinest, you've got Teddy Bruschi, Junior Seau, Rodney Harrison, Ty Law, Sean Springs, remember him? 1 year. Fred Smirlis, who played here 2 years, and obviously was most notable for his time in Buffalo, and Ted Washington, who played here 1 year, about 11 years ago. Those are the guys with Patriots ties that are on the list. My question to you today, and this is where I'd like you to contribute to the show, if you've never had a chance to contribute to the program, this would be a good time to do it. Which one of these nominees do you feel like is most likely to be first nominated, or actually I should say enshrined, into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Who's going to be first? There's 8 players. 8 players with Patriots ties. Who's first in your estimation? Who's liable to be the next Patriot into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Bruschi, McGinest, Seau, Harrison, Law, who just made the Hall of Fame at Patriot Place, Sean Springs, Fred Smirlis, who I think is undervalued here, and Smirlis deserves a slot as well, and Ted Washington. Those are the players. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address if you'd like to give me your 2 cents on who you think the next player should be or will be. Go ahead, be bold, make a prediction, or hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter. Let me know what you think. If you want to pick up the phone, you can do that. Toll free, 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500. Or you can find me on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. And if you haven't submitted a friend request, then do it, and then you can post, and we can chat on the Facebook chat function during the program, and you can send me your thoughts via Facebook. So there's 4 different ways you can get a hold of us here on the program. There you go. Which one of that list of 8 is most likely, in your estimation, to be the next Patriot into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I think that's a good one. That one really intrigued me. So I wanted to throw that out to you today because, you know, you're the Patriots fans. You're the ones who it matters. You're the ones that, quite frankly, may have something to do with that at some point. I think that's a big step. The other thing I wanted to talk about today, I don't know if you've seen this or not. I'm sure you have your favorite announcers. I'm sure you have your network favorites. I'm sure you have your local favorites. I'm sure you have your radio favorites. I'm sure you have your TV favorites. I'm sure you have your favorite favorites. And I'm also quite certain that you have some that you love to hate or you love to bag on. Or when they come on the radio or they come on TV, you turn down the sound because you just can't stand listening to them. I understand that. I have my favorites too, I'll be honest. I do. I also have those that I'm not big fans of. That doesn't mean anything negatively toward those guys. It's just either A, their style is not particularly pleasing to what I want to hear, or since I do know a little bit about the inside workings of this industry, you know, they may be just full of it. It's possible. I mean, haven't you ever listened to a guy, haven't you listened to an announcer, especially, you know, an analyst? Especially an analyst, someone who purports to be an analyst. In other words, someone who's going to tell you something that you don't know, right? Haven't you ever, you know, listened to somebody and just said, that guy's full of it. He has no idea what he's talking about. I know you've got someone like that in mind. And I'd really love for you to share with me what you think, because I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a, I saw this through, SB Nation. There's an online petition going on through Denver fans, Denver Bronco fans, that are, and apparently it has well over 17,000 signatures on this position, because Broncos fans do not want Phil Simms to ever call another game for them. Have you seen this story? If you haven't seen it, it's out there. SB Nation's Mile High Report also has another 5,000 fans on top of the 17,000 on this petition that want to see him banned. Banned from ever calling another game for CBS at Mile High Stadium in Denver. Now, okay. You may think that a guy like Simms is biased against New England. You might think a guy like Greg Gumbel is biased against New England. I don't happen to think either one is true. I really don't. Neither one of these guys, by the way, or, you know, Jim Nantz, or, you know, whether it's, you know, Ian Eagle, who was the play-by-play list last week, or Dan Fouts, who we talked to on this program last week, or, I mean, there could be any number of guys that are out there you feel like are biased. John Gruden, a Monday Night Football, whoever. Let me say this. If a guy's a former player or a former coach, and even if he had, you know, a real heated rivalry with New England at some point in time, or any team, and in this case, Simms, a real heated rivalry with Denver, you know, his professionalism at what he does now is never going to allow him, ever going to allow him to be that jaded against a team. That doesn't exist. Now, might he be flip? Might he be utterly critical? Certainly he's going to not wave the pom-pom like fans want announcers to do. And I've been kind of reading through some of the comments from some of the Denver fans on why they think Phil Simms is biased against them and why they're signing this petition to ban him from coming back to Mile High Stadium. First of all, I don't think it's ever going to happen. They want to ask CBS to never have, you know, Nantz and Simms call another game again, especially Simms. They say Nantz apparently can stick around. But a deep-seated bias against the team, it just doesn't happen. Because if it did happen, then he wouldn't hold a job for very long. Why do you then? First of all, do you think there's an announcer out there that has a bias against the Patriots? That's what I want to know today. Is there an announcer you feel is biased against the Patriots? And on the other side, is there an announcer out there that is biased for the Patriots that you feel like is particularly friendly to New England? Hey, one is as good as the other. If you think you've observed that, I would love to hear from you today. And if you have any instances, if you have any examples, please feel free to give me an example. It's one thing just to say, oh, so-and-so sucks, you know, or oh, so-and-so blows, he's terrible. Well, that's fine. I understand you may not like this person in particular, but why? See, I'm into the why. Give me something, you know, with teeth to it. Give me something we can all chew on and consider, because that's going to have much more meaning to those who are listening today than just say, oh, so-and-so blows, so-and-so stinks. Not good enough. Give me a why. Is there an announcer you'd like to see banned from Foxborough Stadium? Or Foxborough Stadium, Gillette Stadium. Yeah, let's ban him from Foxborough. Gillette Stadium. Is there somebody you think should be banned because he's biased against the Patriots? All right, there you go. You got a lot to chew on today. That and who's the most likely next Pro Football Hall of Famer from New England in light of the list of 113 nominees that came out late yesterday. 855-PATS-500, webradio at patriots.com. Do it on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster is the Twitter address, and John.Rook on Facebook. Eric will be here in a little bit for an update on the practice. Mike Wegeman from Silver and Black Illustrated coming up in hour number two. We hit on the Raiders and you. Plenty of stuff to get to. Give you a couple of moments here to get your thoughts together. Fire them off. Ready, set, go.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at patriotsproshop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
Yeah, step inside the playbook, why don't you? Just come on in. I'll try not to slam it shut on you. Webradio@patriots.com is how you get us here on the program. That's the email address. Toll free, 855-PATS-500. Anywhere you're listening, toll free, 855-PATS-500. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Thank you to those of you who are coming aboard as Twitter followers. It's always appreciated. And, you know, you don't have to tweet just during the during the show here. I mean, we talk about, you know, all things Patriot during all hours of the day and sometimes night. And when I forget to turn my phone off, that thing buzzes like crazy. Forget to turn my phone off, and my phone is going crazy, and I'm waking up, I'm like, what the hell is that? It's somebody tweeting me from England.
Yeah, so after you after you eat dinner at, what, 4:30 in the afternoon?
Then? Yeah, that's right. Oh, my goodness. It's like, oops, that's my bad. No, that's my mistake. I can turn my phone off. Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, that's the way it works sometimes. It's okay. I love everybody who listens and everybody who takes the time, you know, to tweet or, you know, to send emails or, you know, Facebook message or whatever. That's fine. The only thing I would ask it really doesn't make any difference because my phone makes some kind of a noise, whether you Facebook post or whether you tweet. So makes no difference. Whichever one you choose is fine by me. And I do read them all. If I can't get to them, I apologize profusely. Sometimes time just precludes me from doing that, but I guarantee you I read all of them. I read all of them and I return as many messages as I possibly can. So thanks for those. All right. Again, two topics to consider today. Number one, read to you the list of Patriots who are on the nominee list for the Pro Football Hall of Fame for 2015. There are 8 ex-Patriot players in the group of 99 players. 113 nominees all told. Teddy Bruschi, Willie McGinnis, Junior Seau, Rodney Harrison, Ty Law, Sean Springs, Fred Smirlus, Ted Washington. All named as nominees. Of those 8, who is most likely to be first or next as a Pro Football Hall of Famer in Canton, Ohio? That's number one. And number two, in light of the fact that Denver fans have this rather large online petition to ban Phil Sims from calling any more of their games on CBS television in Denver. Is there an announcer out there that A, you hate, B, you feel like is biased against New England? And why? All right, so there you go. You've got lots to chew on today. Lots to chew on today. Let me start off with a couple of tweets that just came right through. John says, definitely Junior Seau into the Hall of Fame before the others, and Sims and Collinsworth are the two that I can't stand. It's universal, I guess, about Sims and Collinsworth. Actually, Phil Sims, I actually think, has done a pretty good job and has as improved as he has, worked longer with Phil, with Jim Nance. This last week or two, though, that he's had two games to do, a Thursday night and a Sunday game. I think he slipped a little bit. It's probably because he's just got too much going on. I really think that there should be a separate announce team for Thursday, because I just don't think you can do any of these teams justice by having to, you know, juggle and learn so many teams. And you say, well, they've been around for a long time, so I suppose that you would think that they would know these guys, but you know what? I think you've got to understand, these guys dig in, and they take their job seriously, as I said. Whether you think they do or not, they do. And so sometimes what they have to say is not necessarily things that you want to hear. Chris Collinsworth, I also think, has gotten a bad rap. Now, he's been a little smarmy. He's been a little whiny. He's been a little, you know, I don't know. And maybe that's just his attitude, because he's, you know, he's always like, well, I played and you didn't, and so I know more. And I think that was his prevalent attitude earlier in his career. But now that he's had a few years to work with Al Michaels, who is the absolute consummate pro, as far as I'm concerned, I think, you know, Collinsworth's game as an analyst has risen to Al Michaels' level. He's not on that level. I don't think anybody will get to that level. But I think Collinsworth actually is a pretty good listen. And he's actually fairly insightful. If you can get over the whiny nature of his voice, listen to what he says. He's telling me something every game that I did not know about one of those teams, or about, you know, certain circumstances or situations. Chris Collinsworth is usually the guy that's telling me that. And I appreciate that. And I feel like I know as much football as, well, anybody that, short of, you know, having played it. I've been covering the NFL for the better part of 30 years. More than that, actually. But I understand why, you know, because those two guys, you know, are, you know, CBS and the Sunday night game now on NBC. And so they're seen by a lot of people. Thank you, John. Eduardo tweets, he says, Teddy Bruschi, without a doubt. Adam tweets, I think it should be Ty Law, but I think it will be quite a while before either he or Big Mac get in, even if they ever do. Yeah, I think, frankly, Matt says, Junior and Rodney go in together. Teammates honoring Junior and getting Rodney in, that would be the best way to do it. Now, that's a great suggestion. Great suggestion. Why not? Because they spent a number of years together as teammates in San Diego. Inarguably the best years that Junior Seau had, most notable years certainly that he had. He's a Hall of Famer in my book. Rodney's a Hall of Famer in my book. I think Ty Law's a Hall of Famer in my book. And I think Teddy Bruschi is on the edge. And the reason I say that is he wasn't a dominant performer, but without him, the Patriots defensively aren't what they were in winning three Super Bowls. He was a part of championship winning teams. He was undersized, I think we all know, as a lineman and as a linebacker, but he got more out of his ability than maybe any other Patriot in ever. Pro Bowl caliber ability from Teddy. He personified a lot of what the Patriots seem to stand for, you know, then and now, and will continue to stand for in days to come. And that's, I think, what a lot of us admire about Teddy Bruschi's ability. Not sure who I think will actually be first amongst that list. My guess would be, because he's in the media, you know, so prevalently now with ESPN, that Bruschi's going to get a lot of run. A lot of run. But my way of thinking, Law probably deserves it. And I certainly think Junior and Rodney deserve it. I think all four, before too long, will get into the Hall of Fame. I'll let you know who I think out of those four will most likely be first. And let me say this about Fred Smirlus. And Fred is a friend. I considered Fred a friend for a number of years, probably 25 years now. Even though he only played for a brief while and was relatively uneventful in New England, you know, with some bad football teams, you know, his career was marked as a Buffalo Bill. That's why he's, you know, noted as one of the all-time Bills greats. And I think, you know, he sort of set the standard for nose guards, nose tackles. So if you're going to look at guys who are two-gap players, guys who chew up a lot of space, guys who take on rushers and allow others behind them to make plays, and I think you could probably say somewhat safely that, you know, Bruce Smith could, you know. Now, Bruce Smith, I believe, was he? I may be wrong about this. I got to go back and look at the years. He may have come along right after Fred left Buffalo. It's right somewhere in there, I think. But there are several guys, I think, that are involved with Buffalo that you could probably say would be potential Hall of Famers, but probably owe a debt of gratitude to a guy like Smerlus. And if you're going to put any middle guard or any nose tackle in there, whether it's Will Fork or even a guy like Washington who made the list this year, and I'm not sure that you do, but it's got to be Smerlus first. He sort of defined the position. It's kind of like putting a designated hitter in baseball into Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, how, you know, maybe Boston's David Ortiz deserves to go because he, you know, has gone down as one of the greatest DHs of all time. It's almost been a specialty type of position. And Fred sort of created that. Fred sort of established the standard for playing nose guard, nose tackle, or whatever you want to call it, middle guard. You know, it's all really one and the same. I guess on a spot chart now it's called NT, nose tackle. When a more apt description could be, depending if you're playing a four or five man front, it could be middle guard, it could be nose guard, whatever. It's really a nose tackle. All right, let me get to a couple of others here. Oh, goodness. Hold on just a second here. My mistake. Let's get to Eldridge, North Carolina, who's actually been hanging on for a couple of minutes. Hey, Eldridge, you're in the playbook today. What's up?
Hey, John. How you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy.
I'm doing good. I'm looking at Ty Law should be first.
Okay.
Most likely probably Brewski. And I like McGinnis also, man, because he have changed that outside linebacker defensive end for the Patriots also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish all of them get in there, but, you know, that'd be a conspiracy or something like that.
Yep.
Towards New England.
Yeah.
You know, if all of them got in there.
Well, let's also keep in mind now, Eldridge, the Patriots did win three Super Bowls in a four-year span, so I think there's going to be a lot of consideration given to guys who are on one or all of those rosters, especially guys that were a part of all three of those championships.
Yes.
There's no doubt in my mind that that puts Brewski and Law, or Law and Brewski, at the top of that list.
Right, and then McGinnis, and then come Harrison, you know, and Junior too, but Junior gonna get in there regardless.
I agree with that, and I think the suggestion from the Matt on Twitter that you know, Rodney and Junior go in on the same class. If the NFL and the committee has a heart, I think that would be an outstanding way to tug at some heartstrings throughout the country amongst all NFL fans. I think that would be deserving because Rodney is deserving, and certainly Junior is deserving for his time spent in San Diego.
Same here. Now, the commentators I hate the most, John Gruden and Michael the Gaff Strahan.
Now, tell me why you hate Gruden. Why do you hate Chucky?
Chucky changed from the coach to once he on TV, he like this guy got so much boom, so much. I mean, he said that about every player. Every player from every team, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's number one, but sometimes that might be true in some instances, but not on every team.
Mm-hmm.
Not on every team, you know. Especially when you tell me bragging on the team, that team ended up losing. Most of the time. You know, but Strahan, he just hate us from day one. And especially...
Well, now you don't just say he hates. Tell me why he hates.
Okay. Doing this Hall of Fame speech, we were talking about that team that's supposed to be so perfect, 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
They went 17, they went 19, 18-1 because of us. And he keeps rubbing that in every time, even on TV, when he's announcing, especially on one of the Patriots games, you know. And then he also did it the last two times the Giants played, he gave the pep talk.
Yeah, but doesn't he have a right to? I mean, he did. He was a part of a team that won.
Yeah, he was part of a team that won, but you're an NFL announcer now. You know, I know that camaraderie is still there because you just been removed a little bit, but
I'm just playing devil's advocate with you here. But all I'm saying is that he's in a position to be an analyst and give an opinion. He's not supposed to be right down the middle of the book and play it impartially because he's not on a game broadcast. He's basically sitting on that NFL Today set and he's giving an opinion, which is what he's being paid to do.
Giving an opinion, but like I said, he bashes. He don't just give opinion; he bashes. And his other partner. The guys, he'd be on the NFL channel, NFL network at night with McGinnis. You know, McGinnis is for the Patriots, no matter what. You know, he's still loves the craft.
Well, isn't that biased the other way?
Yes, biased the other way. But he still, you know, he picks out the weaknesses and the strength. You know what I mean? Straight hand don't do that. He just goes straight for the juggler, and that's that.
All right. That's okay.
That, you know.
All right.
The Raiders, I hope we don't sleep on them because, see, one thing everybody keeps looking at, okay, we had a pretty good game this week against Minnesota without a running attack. Okay, but we also ate Minnesota without our offensive line. The Raiders got a defensive line that can give our line havoc because most of them played against them, like Jason Tuck, Woodley, and the other guy on the other end, and they number two in the passing game. They're number two in the pass.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Brady, that's my quarterback. Just like Terrell Owens said a long time ago about the Dallas coach. That's my quarterback. I will follow him to the end. But Brady got to come off that 1-2-man read and hit everybody else too.
Well, he can do that. And Eldridge, if you were listening a little bit earlier, and thanks for the call, Eldridge, but, you know, he can do that only if he's got more than one or two receivers in the game because they were going with a little bit different lineup last week against Minnesota, which was part of the problem why he didn't have other guys to go to. I understand that's, you know, where a lot of Patriot fans have problems with Brady right now. He seems to be relying too heavily on Julian Edelman. Well, the fact of the matter is that they had heavy packages in the game, which was emphasizing the run. There's nobody there he can throw to. I'm not saying he's not being too reliant, but the fact is you have to consider the situation. Look at the field, and then, you know, if he continues to do the same thing, then again, this is something we might be able to revisit. Eric Scalavino has popped in from the locker room. What's up,
Ian? Hey, JR, how you doing?
Good. How are we doing today?
Got some good news from practice and some not-so-good news from practice.
Okay, go.
No Jerod Mayo. Don't know why. Don't want to speculate.
Yeah.
I don't want to speculate, so I won't.
But he, well, that's what we
all,
do here.
All I'll say is that he did not appear to be injured after Minnesota's game.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to him in the locker room afterwards. He seemed
everything was fine.
Seemed like everything's fine. So
he was around yesterday or Monday.
I'm not here on Mondays, but.
Right.
It leads me to believe that it's not injury related, so I wouldn't be too concerned with.
Isn't his wife pregnant and about ready to deliver?
That's kind of where I think so.
Okay.
So that
it might be family related.
It might be family related. I didn't know if that was public knowledge or not, so I didn't want to. I didn't want to say.
I've seen it in a couple of places.
Okay.
And I actually think your PFW brethren were talking about it earlier today.
Oh,
as well,
all right. Then,
for a short while.
Okay.
Then, at least I believe that that's the case. I don't want to be presumptuous, as you said, but I thought that that was the case. And if so, that would explain today's, could have something to do with today's absence.
Yeah, that was the most notable absence. Jamie Collins, who was out last Friday, was back again and didn't play against Minnesota, but
right.
He was back on the field today. So that's the good news.
Okay.
From there, they've brought back Daxton Swanson, rookie defensive back, but we don't know yet who was
released,
let go to make room for him.
Yeah, I heard you guys talk about that earlier.
Active roster or the 53.
Mm-hmm.
I have everybody accounted for on both the practice squad and the 53, so don't know what to make of that yet.
Hmm.
Announcement, I guess, to be. Well, coming by the
it
end of the
could
day.
Happen. It could happen. You know, by the time we get done here, it most likely happen when they probably do the practice report after 4 o'clock Eastern. That would be my guess. That's usually when it comes.
So that's what's going on out there at practice.
So there was we know who the mystery person is.
Who was signed?
Who was signed. We just don't know
who
was
let go.
Moved. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And It's not Gerard Mayo, clearly.
No, I wouldn't think so.
But that's that was a little bit of drama today at practice, figuring out who was here, who wasn't. But locker room today, I was doing a story on Nate Ebner, so I got to talk to him for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really ever talked to him before. He's not, I think, accustomed to giving interviews either. So he needs
he needs a little polish.
He needs a little polish. You know, and he could be. I think he's better than he was originally because I think he's a little shy to begin with. But he got a lot of action this week.
He did.
Defensively, not just on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little surprised by that. I don't know if you.
Well, I know that you know there has been a bit of a revolving door at the safety position overall. Anyway, it does seem like they lean one way toward players when you know the offense is liable to run, and they lean another way completely when an offense is liable to pass. We've seen that they have favorites. I know that the my guess would be they would love to have somebody man the position for all times, but that they don't really feel like right now they have that, and that may be part of the reason why Ebner's getting some run.
Mm. I was just I was a little taken aback by it. The number of reps he got early on in that game, where we hadn't really, you know, they were doing a lot of experimenting with safety during the summer, as you know, and he got a few reps too, but didn't seem like he had. It looked like Patrick Chung had become, by the end of the summer, the guy who was going to be next to McCourty. But as you said, we've been seeing a lot still since the season started of the rotation there. Not sure about that, John. I'd like to have some consistency in my lineup.
I would agree. Consistency is huge. I mean, we saw where consistency was huge in the offensive line last week because they didn't rotate in and out
at all.
Did against Miami.
No.
And we saw the end result. It certainly was an improved sense of play, you know. So you'd like to have that same type of consistency in your secondary, without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Gronk spoke a little bit today. Wasn't great, got to be honest. Was not great material there. Nothing really earth-shattering.
He's got to be frustrated that he just, you know, he's not quite 100%. And even though he probably wants to be out there, he's just not. We've kind of seen it. He still looks like he's lumbering a little bit out there, maybe favoring, you know, the knee just a smidge. I'm not saying that he's in any discomfort or, you know, that he's not able, but, you know, and the Patriots are not putting him in a position. He's not out there for the snaps that you would normally think if he were completely healthy that he would be out there for. And so I'm wondering if maybe the whole process isn't wearing on him a little bit.
Frustrating him, you mean?
Yeah.
Possibly. But he seems in good spirits. I don't want to give that impression that he's not, but... Mm-hmm. Just not a lot of, I mean, like week one, saying he was going to play, that was huge news, you know. And last week even, some of his comments were a little bit newsworthy, but not just kind of a lackluster, I'd say, overall for player interviews today in the locker room.
General mood was continued to be upbeat over last week?
I don't even know if it's upbeat. I think it was just
business
kind of,
as usual.
Yeah, business-like. They're trying not to take the Raiders for granted.
Yeah, and any thoughts about, you know, the home opener coming in week three? Anybody mention anything about that at all?
Yeah, Stephen Ridley was asked about that, and I think his response was something to the effect of, you know, do you like coming home at night at the end of the day and, you know, hearing good things? They like coming home and playing in front of a favorable crowd. So, it seems like it's been a while since we played a game here, doesn't it?
Yeah. We had back-to-back preseason games a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like they've been gone forever.
Yeah. But I don't mind it. I enjoy the getting up and seeing something different, fresh scenery.
I know you do.
Of Minnesota Stadium wasn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a nice-looking stadium.
You been there?
I have been by it a couple of times. I don't get to Minneapolis all that often, so mostly on, you know, changeovers and planes and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I've actually seen it. I've just never been in it.
Yeah,
and
nice little place.
Yeah, looks like a pretty nice place.
Nice little place.
There, a couple of quick things I want to ask you about. Number one was late yesterday, the list of nominees for 2015, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, came out. There were 99 players, and eight of them with Patriot ties. And so one of the questions that I'm asking our listeners today, of the eight, who is most likely to go first into the Hall of Fame? It's Brewski, McGinnis, Seau, Harrison, Law, Sean Springs, Fred Smirlis, Ted Washington.
Ooh, who's most likely to go in first?
And if you haven't had your chance, if you're just tuning in or you're tuning in late, feel free to fire off your answer to webradio@patriots.com or hit me up on Twitter at JR Broadcaster.
I think posthumously, Seau.
Seau? That's kind of the way that
I'm
leaning.
He had the best career.
Yeah, he did. He did. And even though he was really more noted for his time in San Diego as a Charger, I think it's possible. And there was a good suggestion by someone on Twitter a short while ago that, both perhaps Harrison and Seau go in the same class.
Yeah, it's possible.
And I think it's possible. I think Seau is probably based on the entire career and the entire, background. He's, to me, the guy that's most likely to go in first. Brewski's going to get heavy consideration because he's currently in the media.
It just seems so, wow, 5 years since Seau last played.
Yeah.
And wow.
And 5 years from Brewski? Yeah.
I think Seau's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I really do. Harrison, not so sure first ballot, but I think he'll get in.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I'm going to say, Seau probably. I'd be a little surprised if Seau does not get in 2015 because he's a first ballot guy here.
Me too.
So I think he's probably most likely to be first. And then to me, it's a toss up. Law, Harrison, Brewski. I think all three of those guys. I think McGinnis has got a shot. And I had a shout out earlier as well for Fred Smirlis because he sort of helped define the nose tackle position. Mm-hmm. Although he only played here for a couple of very poor years, but his career was noted in the 1980s primarily for
Buffalo,
being dominant on the line in Buffalo.
Yeah,
and I certainly think he deserves consideration for that.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And he's one of those guys that probably is been forgotten about because of the position he played and
Agreed.
The era that he played in, and it might take him a little bit longer to is he part of the senior nomination?
I don't know if they've actually gone down to the,
because it's been more than 5 years obviously since his name
retired. I'm assuming that that's just part of the overall the big picture, and then they whittle it down and divvy it up between current inductees or eligible inductees and seniors. The way that it happens is the selection committee is going to choose 25 candidates as semifinalists in late November. So we got a couple of months to go before we get. So this total of 99 players and 14 coaches gets whittled down to a final 25. Mm-hmm. And then of that, the list is reduced to 15 modern era finalists. Now, I don't know if he's considered modern era or not. I'm assuming he would be, because it's only been 20 some odd years since he quit playing.
Right. I think modern era they consider the merger.
So 70?
I believe that's what they consider
1970?
Modern era. Yeah.
They may have to start rethinking that pretty soon.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I know.
That's
right?
Only been 44, 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Question number two was, did you hear the Denver fans have an online position going on to try to ban Phil Sims from doing any more games at Mile High?
No.
Because they think he is incredibly biased against Denver.
Really?
Yes. 22,000 signatures and counting on this online petition that they're going to deliver to CBS to say, we don't want Phil Sims in Denver anymore.
Well, that's not going to do them any good.
Of course it's not. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. But at the same time, so is there a guy out there on television you think is biased against the Patriots? An analyst? That you've listened to?
Marshall Faulk.
That's a good one. I totally forgotten about him.
Yeah, without a doubt.
That's a really good one.
And he is, I think, basically come out and said so.
Because he's just...
Number of times.
He's still pissed off at the Patriots for 0-1.
Yeah. He feels like he was gypped of a ring. And I think he's essentially confessed that. Doesn't hide it.
That's awesome. For some reason, that went right by me today. I'm trying to think of all these guys that are currently doing games. I'm like, I don't think these guys are really biased one way or the other. That's a good one. Marshall Faulk. Yeah, absolutely. I'd have to say that that's a pretty strong candidate because you're right. He does seem to give the Patriots a dig anytime that the subject comes around in New England, which to me shoots his credibility as an analyst altogether, because how can you believe a guy? If he's already one-sided and lopsided against one team, then how can you take what he says about another team?
You can't.
You can't.
Yeah, it's like listening to a political debate or, analysis from someone.
He could be lying about another team because of some unforeseen or unheard or unknown about bias against them.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Wow, that's a good one.
Thank you.
That's a really good one. Oh, good job out of you.
Thanks.
You got time for a word of the day?
Always.
You have time?
Always.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
Quick question, how did I do last week with Robin?
You know what?
Sybaritic.
Sybaritic. I don't think, we didn't discuss it. I know. For some reason or another, I don't know why, but it just didn't come up in conversation. So right. I will ask her about that one.
All right.
Sybaritic.
Please
I remember
do.
That one.
Today's word is plangent.
Plangent.
P-L-A-N-G-E-A-N-T? Nope. Just E-N-T.
G-N-T.
Yep.
Okay.
Plangent.
Okay. Plangent. Plangent. I have no clue on this one. I'm drawing a blank.
There's a primary and a secondary meaning, so I'll give you both.
Okay.
I'll give you both meanings. The first one is striking with a deep reverberating sound. Think the gonging of a bell or the crashing of waves against the shore.
That's a call.
That would be a plangent, sound.
Sound?
Yeah.
That's a plangent sound.
Mm.
Okay.
The second meaning is sad or plaintive.
Sad or plaintive. Okay.
So you could say that after week one, Patriots fans were in a plangent mood.
Okay. All right. I follow. I think we got to give them the gong on that one. I would have gone a completely different direction with the meaning behind that.
What would
I to thinking? Me? I was just trying to get to the
get
roots.
To root words.
Yeah. I would have gotten to the roots just because that's the Latin background in mm-hmm. me, and I probably would have gone more toward something that would be, I don't know, tangible. I don't know if it's just because it rhymes with plangent or not, but something that is certain. If it's something is plangent, then mm-hmm. it's something that's certain or a fait accompli almost. Does
yep.
that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have gone more that direction, just trying to pick apart at the roots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's actually good. I learned something today, and I thank you for that.
You're very welcome. That's why I love to do it.
All right. Thanks for the report.
You got it.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Sure.
All right. You got it. Eric Scalavino and the word of the day. What are your thoughts on, A, the most likely Patriots player amongst the nominees to be as a possible Pro Football Hall of Famer for 2015, who's first on that list of players, in your estimation, to make it? Brewski, McGinnis, Seau, Harrison, Law, Springs, Smirlis, Washington. And you got a biased NFL analyst out there that you feel is dead set against New England, that you just can't stand? 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number, webradio@patriots.com, the email, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter, and John.Rook on Facebook. We'll also get into the Oakland Raiders, but it's time for you to take over, coming up right here in the playbook.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. 508-298-0398. That's the Ace Ticket Hotline here locally. You can jump right on board. Toll-free number is 855-PATS-500. I really thought that this would get a little more interest today than apparently we're getting in terms of Patriot players from the recent past who are now nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I thought that we, you know, might get deluged. I'll get to some of the emails here in just a moment, but a little surprised. I don't know. Is it midweek blah? Is it because it's the Raiders? Because you expect this team to win on Sunday? What is it? We're going to get complacent here just like you don't want the team to be? I mean, you're asking the team not to be complacent, so why are you? Just kind of asking out loud, you know, overall. Like your thoughts there, your thoughts on, you know, potential biased analysts that may be out there as well. The Chad from Atlanta sent this email. He goes, it seems as clear as day to me that this year and last year, Peyton has been the better QB. I guess in terms of comparing to Tom Brady. He just looks more comfortable in the pocket. Manning looks like a maestro waving his wand, directing his orchestra, while Brady looks like a foreman in a construction zone yelling at lazy workers. It's a pretty good analogy, actually. I hate saying Manning is better than Brady, but right now I think he is, and I don't know if it's Brady's O-line or his wide receiver talent. Did Mankins really make that big of an impact? Are the wide receivers really that bad? Well, that's an excellent question. I don't know that I want to say that the wide receivers are really that bad, but I would also tell you that I don't think that Tom Brady has had anywhere near the overall level of talent from top to bottom on the roster that Peyton Manning has worked himself into. You certainly can make a statement for when Manning was in Indianapolis before things went south of, you know, Brady having perhaps at least as good and maybe in some instances better talent to throw to. But I think it's just a matter of who he has to throw to. And whether or not you want to, you know, lie blame at the feet of, you know, the Patriots coaches and player personnel folks, well, I guess that's your right to do that. But at the same time, I think a lot of it has to do with who you're surrounded by. I think Brady's still got the stronger arm. I don't know if he's quite as accurate. I think Brady has every bit the mobility that Peyton does. I just think he's throwing to different talent. I don't think the Patriots' wide receivers are really that bad, but I think that they're still learning. I hope that answers some of your questions, at least, Chad. Wow, this computer is just absolutely crawling along here. Steve in Killeen, Texas. I'm happy with the win over the Vikings, but it had a week one deferred result to it. I see the Raiders being Raiders. And another win coming with Ridley getting another 100-yard game along with Julian, only two options, Edelman, doing his thing as well as the rest of the missing person's receivers finally being found to some degree. Also, if the D continues to progress, I will be happy, but I would be lying if I said the O-line was still not my number one glaring concern. Finally, Brisket is coming. Oh, man, that's just unbelievable news, Steve. Kevin's salivating as we speak, I think. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that. Yeah, the offensive line, I think, still has to be part of the concern. I think they made major strides last week just by, you know, keeping that group, that contiguous group together and giving them a chance to run block, which, as we all know, that's what offensive linemen would rather do. They'd much rather blast ahead and block somebody than have guys blast on them and pass block. That's just the nature of the beast in being an offensive lineman. They'd much rather charge ahead than be in a retreating type of stance. Let's see if that continues this week. Again, Oakland is dead last in the league in allowing rushing yards. You're giving up 200 yards per game in the first 2 weeks. Let's see if the Patriots figure out a way to take advantage of that. Robin in Alaska says, from that list, I think Junior Seau will be the most likely Hall of Famer, followed by Ty Law. Rodney Harrison should get in too. Sometimes people forget he tallied up at least 30 sacks and 30 picks in his career. And if I recall right, he was the first safety to do so. Yeah, I think you recall correctly. So that does mean that, you kind of fall in line, I think, with both what Eric and I were talking about. Seau, most likely to go first out of that list of the group. Law will probably soon follow. Harrison is right there. I don't think you could make a mistake with any of them. So if one of those guys gets in over the other, I don't think you should look on that positively or negatively in any way. I think they're all going to be Hall of Famers. But again, my question was, who do you think is likely to be the first from this group to reach Canton, Ohio? Brian is writing from Richmond, Virginia. He says, not really a game announcer, so don't blame me if you don't count him for the show, but he is one of the biggest anti-Patriots hacks on TV, and I think he means Marshall Faulk. Still doing all he can to keep Spygate alive and blame that Super Bowl loss to that and that alone. And then he also goes with Kurt Warner. I also think he feels the same way, but at least he doesn't protect it or project it with a bullhorn given an opportunity or not. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, that's kind of how, Eric sort of brought, into the play here, into the fold here. I totally agree. Marshall Faulk, and I don't know why he just kind of slipped my mind, but that's a perfect example because every time he comes on and it has to do with, a story that they're talking about on the NFL Network about the Patriots, he takes every dig he can at New England, which to me says absolutely everything about, the NFL Network in terms of their journalistic credibility. They have zero. And again, this is the league that we all, purportedly work for, or at least, some of us more so than others. But they make no bones about it. They're all about entertainment. They don't care. They don't really care, I think, about journalistic technique or qualities here. What they want is they want the entertainment value. They want, I believe, a guy like Marshall Faulk to get under your fingernails and basically piss you off. I think that's what they want. I don't think they care one way or the other. I think they like the fact that he is biased against New England, that he says inflammatory things about New England. And all I can tell you is one of these days, some of that bias is going to come out and it's going to come right back around and it's going to whip him. And then you know what? He's going to end up saying something that he shouldn't have said. And there will be a bias lawsuit or, libel or something thrown against him. So that's why you have to be careful with this. That's why you don't walk down that line in journalistic entities. You have to be impartial. No matter your personal feelings, you have to be impartial. That's how you get truth to come out. And Marshall Faulk is just not one of those guys. And I don't think, like I said, NFL Network doesn't want him to be one of those guys. Clay from Foster, Rhode Island says, I've never heard Marshall Faulk say one positive thing on NFL Network about the Pats. It's always a breakdown by the opposing team that allows the Pats to win. On the flip side, I'd have to say Scott Zolak and maybe Willie McGinnis are serious homers, but that's okay. In regards to the Hall, I think Big Willie should be there next. He holds the all-time sack record for the postseason. All right, that's a good vote for Willie McGinnis and a good point forward for Willie. I think he's capable of getting in. I don't know that he gets in above two or three of those other guys, but then again, we're not, active parts of the voting machine that will put these players in the Hall for next year. So who knows? Right now, these are the guys that are on the list. Dave is hitting us up here. Doesn't say from where, but he says, although he technically isn't an announcer, the one person who hates the Patriots is Marshall Faulk on NFL Network. Seems like we're going to get a ton of these, huh? He is an obvious axe to grind. Primary stems from the Patriots' first Super Bowl win against the Rams. He blames Spygate for costing him a ring. If you ever watch him talk about New England or Bill Belichick, he doesn't hide it. As far as the worst announcer of all time, I'd have to say Colts announcer Bob Lamy. Don't get me started on that clown. Wow. Really? Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. James in Virginia. John, I have my favorites from the list of eight Patriot Hall of Fame nominees, but you asked who would be first. So in my opinion, Junior Seau would be the sentimental favorite due to his untimely death. All right, James, thank you for that. You have your list. You have your favorites, though. Is somebody else other than Seau your favorite? That's the obvious question that I would probably tend to ask here. Chad from the ATL. I'd like to see Teddy go in the Hall of Fame. His story is definitely inspirational, and he was my favorite player back in the day. And Marshall Faulk is the biggest Patriots hater I've ever seen. I know he doesn't commentate, but he rarely has anything good to say about the Pats. And yes, I think he still has a grudge from the 2001 Super Bowl. No question. Pete in Augusta, Maine says, Big Willie McGinnis would be my pick. Many great plays. Probably doesn't have the overall numbers. Bias against the Patriots? Well, that's Marshall Faulk. I think he never got over the Super Bowl loss. That definitely seems to be a given when it comes to picking guys who might have a bias. On Facebook, Mary Beth says, I think it'll go to Seau, Harrison, or Law, perhaps in that order. I hope Bruschi can get there, but just not sure. I don't really disagree with your order there, Mary Beth. I think Seau, because of the overall body of work, even though he was, you know, the tail end of his career with New England, probably deserves to go above the others, as I opined a short while ago with Eric. But I think it would be great if Rodney Harris could go with him, since they were former teammates in San Diego especially. And Ty Law, who was just inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame, I think he's worthy of going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. He's definitely worthy. I think he's got the swag. He's got the numbers. He's got the persona. I think he's all the ingredients, just like I think Teddy Bruschi also has those ingredients as well. So that's pretty good. William also puts up on Facebook, he says, what's Patrick Chung's major flaw? A lot of guys don't like him as a safety. I saw him in Miami a couple of years ago, and he really flashed. Well, I think primarily, William, I'll try to answer this as best as I can, because it's subject, I think, to opinion, which means a subjective. Some are going to agree, some are going to disagree. Primarily speaking, I think they feel like his cover skills are not what they should be for his safety, that he continually emphasizes his ability to get up close to receiver, and receivers are faster and quicker and have better footwork, and they tend to blow by him, which is why you've seen the Patriots, I think, utilize him against the run primarily, because he's a strong physical player. And that they'd bring in somebody else, at least this last week, Daron Harmon, it was primarily, against the pass. So, you know, while I think the Patriots would love to see one person take over the strong safety position, it's kind of a flavor of the day type of situation, in that position right now. And Chung is one of those guys in the mix. I think they thought he would be a better, defender against the pass than he has turned out to be, which is why they soured on him, gave up on him, but then they brought him back this year because of his familiarity with New England and because they weren't sure that they needed one person, that they needed to make sure they had somebody that they could depend on, A, against the run, and B, that could also play on special teams, and then Chung is a guy that can do that. Hope that answers your question. Let's get to Trey in Memphis. Trey, you're in the playbook. How are you today?
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, Trey.
Well, you know, it seems like everybody's been on the offense, man, and I think that it's just going to be an ongoing thing throughout the season. But I got a question. How can you have a complex offense that really doesn't involve your wide receiver? You know, that's one question. I mean, we got a complex offense per se, but we have no four or five wide receiver set. I mean, so
Trey, just because you haven't seen a four or five wide receiver set doesn't mean they don't have it. I can most assure you that they have four and five wideout plays.
I mean, I understand having some plays. I mean, but I mean, if they're so complex, I mean, I don't think our offense is that complex, man.
Well, have you read the playbook?
No, I haven't read the playbook.
All right. Well, then I don't know how you can make that judgment. Unless you've seen the playbook, unless you know what the plays are, unless you've tried to figure out where it is that you got to be, if you're a receiver or you're a quarterback or you're a running back or you're a tight end or what have you, I'm not so sure how you can make that judgment based on what you've seen on television. Because we have a tendency, and I don't mean to ridicule you here, but we have a tendency to watch the ball. When we're watching the game, we're watching the ball. So because we're watching the ball to see where the ball is going, because that's, you know, what you do. You want to see who's moving the ball down the field. We don't really have a good up-close look at what's happening away from the ball, at the things that have to happen for the ball to advance down the field. We don't see receivers blocking, or we don't see, you know, linemen getting away with holds. We don't see running backs missing an assignment. We don't see any of this stuff go on. The coaches see this because they go back and they look at the specific game film for these things. For every snap of the football, you probably have three, sometimes four, even more cameras pointed on the line of scrimmage. And then once the ball is snapped, those cameras go the direction that they are intended to go. One follows defense, one follows offense, one's going to follow the ball, someone's going someplace else, you know, in an effort to be able to see if guys are doing their jobs. So unless you're privy to all of this material, I'm not sure how you can make an accurate statement like that.
Well, John, my thing is I can sit in front of my TV and count the number of skilled players that we have. I mean, I only see two wide receivers. We may have a tight end, and we may have what? Like the other day, we have six offensive linemen on the field. I mean, these are like other games. I mean, I can't remember the last time. I think it was 2007, and I can – remember where we just lined up with a mess of wide receivers. And then I heard you say earlier that Peyton Manning is just lucky to have like so many receivers. I mean, but I remember back in the day, man, Brady just threw to the open guy. And we have won Super Bowls, man, with Jags. I mean, if I'm wrong, I mean, you know, you correct me.
Well, Trey, would you allow for the fact that maybe the reason that Brady has a tendency to go to a guy like Julian Edelman is because he's the only one that's really open?
Well, I disagree, John. I mean, but I just think that, you know, Brady is just so comfortable with the fact that, you know, Julian has been in the system for a long time. And, I mean, but, you know, from what I saw the last 2 weeks, man, Julian has not been the only guy that's been open. He's just been the only guy Brady's been, like, really throwing to on a consistent basis.
Well, he's you know, look, he's throwing to Edelman for a couple of reasons last week. One, because they were in a heavy package, so there just weren't that many lineups. They were the wideouts in the lineup. They were that lineup was conducive to play in the run. That's why you saw six offensive linemen out there, okay? So you weren't going to you can only have 11 at a time on the field. And you had to have a running back, and in a lot of cases they had a fullback out there as well. So because of that, you know, there's just no other room for a wide receiver out there, which is why you did not see them. They just didn't exist. As far as not throwing their way, well, he did throw a couple of times toward Amendola, and he came up with one big catch, but that was ruled, was a penalty on the play. So it goes down as a no catch. So, you know, all I'm saying is that what you see and what may be reality, I think, are two different things here. I'm not saying that you're completely inaccurate, but you have to consider the game plan, and you have to consider what the thought process is offensively going up against a particular team, and that this team does have versatility now. I mean, the one thing this team does have now is some depth. I think the depth is increased in terms of the quality of the depth up and down the roster over where this team was a year ago when injuries started to bite into everybody.
Right, right.
And so because of that, you're going to see different games being game planned differently. Some guys are going to be utilized some weeks, and other weeks they're just not going to be a part of it.
Right.
That's part of the reason why Kenbrell Tompkins was inactive last week, because they knew they weren't going to throw the ball around the field.
Right. Okay, well, I got two last statements, man. If we don't go ahead on and get our passing game, you know, up the par, man, I mean, the scheme that we're running, we're not going to win a whole lot of games. And if we don't go ahead on and pick up and find a safety, they can get it done. You know, this safety by committee stuff is going to cost us against teams that's going to run no huddle, and that's not going to allow us to get substitutions. All right, gentlemen, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you, Trey. Thanks for the time today. You know, I don't know that that's going to be as big a problem as you think it is. I think, obviously, they'd love to find one guy that can play back there, but I don't know that, you know, if someone's running no huddle, that doesn't necessarily mean that, well, hey, we got to get Chung off the field because he can't defend the pass. No, I'm not so sure that's the case. I mean, could somebody take advantage of it? Well, listen, if they're pressing enough to be able to take advantage of it, then, hey, guess what? Sometimes you just have to pat the other guy in the back and say, good job. And we got to do a better job of defending it. 855-PATS-500 is the telephone number. JR in Indiana says, hey, great show. Love listening to you. You make my drive fun. Thank you. Warren Sapp. I hate him. The reason I hate him is not the same reason most guys hate him. Back in 2012, I joined the Army. I was at the airport in Indianapolis in my ACUs. It was February, so the NFL draft was going on. The defensive lineman just so happened to be in the airport with us, and I noticed out of the corner of my eye Warren Sapp standing in a group of people talking and laughing. I decided to walk up to him and ask him for his autograph. I figured he might just be a nice guy, and I thought, wrong. When I asked the question, he looked at me like I was an idiot, and he said, I'm not Warren Sapp. Laughed and then looked at the guy next to him, and then the whole group started laughing. It's not the fact that he was laughing. It was the fact that he was so disrespectful to me when I was in uniform going to serve my country. So I just walked away and sat down. This guy was a complete ass, and I'll never forget that day. I can't stand him when he's on TV. I turn the channel. I hardly can watch NFL Network anymore because it seems like every time I turn it on, he's on. Just thought I would share that story with you. Thank you. JR, I'm really sorry that, or Junior, I guess it's Junior, in Indiana. If that happened to you, shame on him. And shame on the guys that are in the group. Are you 110% sure that it was actually Warren Sapp? That's the only thing I would say. I'm not trying to, you know, say you're wrong. But are you 110% sure it's Warren Sapp? I mean, if he's not, then he just said, look, you know, hey, I get confused all the time for him, and I'm sorry, and the, cost of that autograph is not going to be worth the pen that I write it with, because I'm not Warren Sapp. So the only thing I can tell you is that maybe he just didn't handle it very well. So either A, he's not really Warren Sapp, or B, if he really is Warren Sapp, then he's a bigger jerk than probably most people realize. You know, I thought about that him as a player anyway. He was never very easy to get along with in the media. He was always combative. I'm not even sure why he was combative. But the fact of the matter was that he was. He didn't take criticism very well. And that's just the kind of guy he is. And I, again, along the same lines as Marshall Faulk, the NFL Network doesn't hire guys like that, you know, to be quote-unquote analysts. They hire guys like that to kind of stir the drink and get under people's skin and get under their fingernails and bother them a little bit, because you just don't know what they're going to say next. And so you watch because you think they're going to say something inflammatory, and you want to hear it when they say it so you can go berserk on Twitter or Facebook or, you know, call your friends, or you watch. That's part of how people get drawn in and how ratings are created. They don't care whether you like or you hate. They care that you watch. And so my only answer to you is if you really hate a guy and you really want him to go away, don't watch. And there'll have to be a whole lot of people who don't watch with you. That's the only way that it works. Otherwise, guys like that are going to keep coming out. What I want to see, however, and I'm not sure that I've seen this all that often. I think I've seen some of his fellow, you know, desk mates needle him about a little bit. But in terms of Marshall Faulk and his bias toward, you know, the Patriots, I'd love to see one of those guys get up and say, well, Marshall, you probably say that just because you hate the Patriots. Now, I don't know if that ever has ever been done on that desk. And I'll be honest, I don't watch NFL Network enough to where I would have seen it or not. I really don't. I watch it for some of their games when they've come on. I don't watch a lot of their regular programming. I watch the football live show. I watch a couple of other things here and there, but I'm not a regular viewer of NFL Network. I'm just not. I actually try to spread it around amongst a lot of networks. I might, if I see something that catches my eye, I'll stop in passing, but, you know, I'll see a little ESPN. I'll see a little Fox. And I try to catch a little of the, the NFL show on Showtime that they do now. You know, I try to spread it around so I can get a sampling of what's being talked about within the league. And because I know, at least ESPN tries to be more of a news organization, I have a tendency to go that direction because I think there are more guys who are journalists who are going to give me what the story is rather than an opinion on the story so I can make my opinion for myself. And I know that's not necessarily going to be the case on NFL Network because these guys are clearly agenda-driven. Just my two cents on that. If you have some thoughts, feel free. Webradio at patriots.com. 855-PATS-500 at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Reno says, why isn't Browner eligible to play and got his suspension cut down? Can you explain the new PDE? I don't know what PDE stands for, Reno, but the only thing I can tell you is the story has been breaking all day long in terms of the drug policy, and I'm sure that's probably what you mean here, between the players and the owners, which means that there are some guys that are going to be allowed to play and some that are not. And I'll have to look it up, some of the specifics involved here, because I haven't had enough time to research it yet because the information is continually changing while I'm on the air. So I can't really conduct a program here and study it at the same time. I'll do the best that I can before we get done here with the program and see if I can't answer your question. Brian in Essex, Vermont. Well, the big problem with using the term journalist these days is that the word has been taken out back behind a shed and beaten to death. Personally, people who call themselves journalists are folks I'm instantly skeptical of because the profession has literally no integrity or credibility anymore. Good ones should be publicly shaming the bad ones. Careful, Brian. You're talking to somebody who's been doing it professionally for 35 years here. That having been said, pretty sure the most biased and useless analyst journalist against the Pats would have to be Mike Bradshaw's dead Florio at Poor Football Trash. PFT. He might be buddy-buddy with Tom Curran, but he constantly takes shots at the other teams, constantly applies hypocritical standards or clickbait terminology, causing a massive bleep storm in the comment sections just to make his site seem relevant. The old joke about 10,000 lawyers at the bottom of the sea seems to have been made for people like Florio. Well, Florio is a lawyer, so that should tell you something right there, Brian, number one. Number two, there probably is some truth to him saying something somewhat inflammatory to create clickbait, you know, for, you know, the PFT site. So I understand that. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of sites that like to think that they're news do these days. They do some things that are somewhat inflammatory in order to get people to click on it, to find out there's really no meat to it, and there's no substance to the story. It's just someone spouting off. That does happen. Mike Florio, okay. I don't know that I've ever seen an instance of him being biased against the Patriots. But I'll take you for your word. Chad says, this for the previous caller, Trey. Ocho Cinco said that the Patriots playbook was like algebra compared to Cincinnati's. So it seemed like it's more complicated than you think. You know, I had forgotten that he had said that. That's true. Thank you, Chad, for that. So, Trey, if you're listening, yeah, there have been some receivers that have come through New England that have said that the Patriots playbook is a handful. That's part of the reason why, you know, Chad Johnson didn't flourish here, but he had a hard time sticking here and was really a miserable failure here because he was never able to grasp what the Patriots playbook was all about. He wasn't able to get in the right place at the right time in a lot of instances, and Brady lost confidence in him quickly because he wasn't where he was supposed to be. Thanks for bringing that up, Chad. Brian says, the issue is that Browner's infraction came during the season. Welker and others happened during the offseason. Neither Browner or Timms is eligible. All right, well, that makes sense then. That makes sense. Welker's and others in particular happened during the offseason, so there are different standards and different testing standards and different substances to a degree that are allowed in your system during the offseason as opposed to during the season when it can be considered something that is performance enhancing. Good. Okay. Appreciate that. That's awesome. Brian also says, John, you're one of the good ones, but I'd be remiss to not point out the horrifying state of journalism, and you and I talked about this last year. I think I seem to recall that, Brian. I don't have any real problem with critiques against the state of journalism because, frankly, critiques are what keep everybody on their toes. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, I'm perfect or anybody else in this particular instance is perfect. All I can tell you is that I try to live by a certain set of standards, as I think most legitimate journalists do. And most of these guys who are hired as analysts for television networks or websites or newspapers or blogs or radio stations especially, they don't have the training. It's just like, you know, you or I were thrown into the middle of a football field, even at my prime. Let's say I'm 25 years old. First of all, when I was 25 years old, I'm about 30, 35 pounds less than I weigh right now. So, I mean, I would not have existed. Not for very long anyway. But hopefully you understand, if I'm thrown out there in the middle of a profession and expected to pick it right up, without any sort of coaching or training or any kind of background work at all, I'm going to fail miserably. And a lot of these guys, you know, rely on, I think at least, they seem to be relying on their knowledge of the game, and so that's why they're asked pointed, specific questions regarding their knowledge of the game because they played it, and that's why ex-players in particular, and some ex-coaches too, are hired because they can articulate themselves very well. Some of them do a better job than others. Some of them do a better job than others. There's some that are out there that are really good and have been really good for a long time. There are others that are nothing but just hot air. And, you know, a couple of them certainly do reside on NFL Network. So, you know, I try to stay to a standard. Most reporters that I know try to stay to a standard. Players and ex-coaches sometimes come in and don't realize what that standard is until it's thrown in their face and they're expected to be a journalist, even though they're not. And so I think to consider an ex-player a journalist is really wrong of us anyway. Just because they're on a set or because they're on a game broadcast doesn't make them a reporter in a journalistic sense. It can make them an analyst because they have knowledge of the game, but it really doesn't make them a true reporter. Howard says, John, I personally don't like Jim Nance and Phil Sims. I always feel like they're biased when they call the Patriots games. I understand Nance is apparently a friend of Bill's and may try to go to the opposite direction to ensure he's not accused of bias, but it just kind of rubs me the wrong way. As for the Hall of Famers, he says in this order, Seau, Harrison, Law, Smirlis. I believe they're all locks to get in the Hall of Fame. Maybe not first ballot, but eventually. McGinnis, Brewski, Washington, although very good players, do not have the careers that are Hall of Fame worthy. Don't get me wrong, I think they had great Patriot careers and belong in the Patriot Hall of Fame, but not in the NFL Hall of Fame. You really think that about Teddy Bruschi? I would admit I think he's borderline, but I don't know. I honestly think that his personality and the fact that he's in the media, I think that's going to get him some run with some voters. That's kind of what I think. And I think that's why a lot of guys who might be borderline guys tend to look at the media to further their own careers. I think that's a shrewd move on their part, to be quite honest with you. Glenn is writing us from Ontario. Just wondering if you could answer my question about the Pats' playbook being complicated. Why does it have to be? Other teams seem to be doing just fine with standard playbooks. Why do we have to have one that's like a foreign language? That's a good question. Well, I would tell you, I would answer that, Glenn, by saying I don't think everybody else's playbook is vanilla. I think every team in the NFL, some to more degrees than others, but I think all teams in the NFL have certain difficulties in their playbook that are probably a little hard to catch on to. First of all, terminology changes from team to team. And so it will take a player, especially a skilled player, a little bit longer to catch on when he's been used to calling a flag route something in a playbook as opposed to something else on his new team. Or a post or a button hook or if you're running back, a sweep or an off tackle. They're all called different things. They're not the same thing for every team. Some teams put a lot more motion involved. Some teams like to run the same plays, vanilla plays, but maybe in three or four or five or six different sets, different formations. And the reason is because you like to keep the defense guessing, because that's how you gain an advantage. If you get just a smidge, just a half a second advantage on a defender who might be leaning one way and then comes back the other, you're going to be able to seal your block as a lineman. And therefore, that might allow your running back to go an extra 2, 3, 6, 10, 85 yards on a play. That's always been Bill Belichick's philosophy. It's always been a New England philosophy. Keep the other team guessing. So I would ask you, all right, if the Pats playbook is complicated and there are players who would tell you that it is, current players as well as former players, and then there are other players on other teams who tell you that their playbooks are also complicated, and some of them aren't as much as complicated as you would think they'd be, I would say that the more complicated the playbook, probably the better the team overall. That's just an overall general observation. Maybe those that are simple are easy to figure out, and if they're easy to figure out, I'd argue that unless you've got superior talent, you're probably a middling team. So maybe it's a good thing that you do have a playbook that requires a little, you know, brainwave to be able to decipher it. Maybe you want guys that can focus on the field and understand and comprehend and know where they need to be, because that, of course, is what football is all about. 11 people moving in the same direction with the same goal in mind on the field. I'm not so sure, but other teams seem to be doing just fine. We don't know what other teams have simplistic playbooks. So unless, again, you've got a copy of a playbook, you know, that seems to be simple, and, you know, let's say it's the Denver Broncos, that's a pretty good team. That's a pretty good team with a simple playbook. I would just tell you that I would think the teams like that would be few and far between, just as a general observation. Kind of my thoughts on that. Let me see if I've got a couple of other tweets and or Facebook posts here. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to check up with Mike Wagaman. We've left him a couple of messages already today, and I don't know if it's just the time difference. Keep in mind, 3 hours ahead, so it may very well be something that simple. Hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with him in the playbook tomorrow, because we definitely want to jump into the Raiders. I will say this, for some reason or another, and maybe it's just an East Coast thing, I don't know, but we've had a heck of a time trying to get, you know, Raiders people to even talk to us here. And I don't know if it's because they've lost, what now, 12 in a row, 13 in a row, trips to the East Coast, and they're getting ready to not only play the Patriots here, they lost to the Jets 2 weeks ago, but next week they get to go as far East Coast as you can go. London. So maybe they're a little tired of the whole East Coast thing. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing stuff out here. Not necessarily that we're going to ask about the East Coast. I mean, frankly, when you play a team only once every 4 years, you want to know a little more about them. So we'll take some measures to see if we can't figure it out a little bit better, and and break down the Oakland Raiders for you more so tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to have Mike join us. If not, then we'll get one of his compatriots to join us in the playbook and talk about that a little bit. I do have. Boy, the computer is just wicked slow, Bob, so make sure that you're ready for that today. It just kind of happens that way sometimes when we have 65 different pages called up here. All right, two quick posts here. If I can get it to... Wow. Just moving along at a snail's pace. Don't you just love it? James says, Junior Seau should be the first from this list. Great career. About Sunday, well, let's go out and get the W. Ridley will have a good game, and our offense will have a better game than last week. We're going to keep improving. Brady knows he has to get everyone involved. We've only had two games, guys. And then Blarco from Los Angeles says, Junior Seau should be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He played his heart out, and his afterlife, his life draft after his life tragedies, this would be a great time to remember him. I do think, as I said in the last hour, I do think primarily the Junior of the eight former Patriots that are on that list, I think Junior's probably the first one there. Probably. Doesn't mean he will be, but probably will be there. All right, the Bob Soucy Show is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. Let me ask the question to Bob, see what he thinks. Two questions today. Okay. Is it punched in?
Hit your button.
Hit the button right there in
on
front
the,
of you.
Stanchion.
On the stanchion right there.
How about that?
That's it. Now you're on.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. Two questions. There were eight Patriots on the list of 99 players on the initial ballot for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I don't know if you saw the list or not, but I'll run through it real quick. Bruschi, McGinnis, Sayal, Harrison, Law, Sean Springs, Fred Smirlis, Ted Washington. Of those players, who in your estimation is likely to be first to be inducted into Canton?
Yeah, I think Junior Sayal probably will be the first.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think Willie McGinnis will be the next in line, I think.
Yes, you know what? I'm going to say that out of
and, I'm just saying that without really giving much thought to it.
Sure, and I'd love to see that. I'm going to put McGinnis down the list, and that's no disrespect to Willie.
Who's number two for you?
Number two for me is Ty Law. After Sayal,
yeah. You know, I Ty got into the Patriots Hall of Fame, of course, and because he will be an NFL Hall of Famer. Pro Football Hall of Famer.
And I also think close behind him will be Harrison. I think Harrison probably deserves to go in as well. I also think that there should be some consideration, and I mentioned this in the opening hour, for Fred Smirlis, even though he only played here a couple of years, because his primary career was in Buffalo.
Oh, he was very good as Buffalo.
And he helped define the position of nose tackle in the NFL.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was really, I think, the first great one to play.
You know, the thing about Willie versus Rodney, for example, though, Willie had the three with the Patriots, and I think his role as a defender was something new, too, that elephant position. For this team,
you can make
redefining a spot on the field.
Yeah.
So you know, but I think you make a great point about Fred Smirlis too. But again, I haven't looked at the list. I've only listened to those names and haven't seen the others on it yet today.
It'll be a good debate,
absolutely.
Especially when we get to the end of November and the class of 25 semifinalists are announced, and we'll see if any of these eight make it on the list. I'd be shocked if one or two didn't.
You know, and John, it's so difficult in comparing one generation of player in any sport to another, but especially for football players, and especially those players who played positions that don't have a lot of statistics that one can refer to. So you're really going on memory of the player, and if you're talking about an interior player, for example, then you know, it becomes even more difficult, I think, for most of us to truly accurately judge just how valuable that particular player was and how he compares to his successors or predecessors among the greatest in the game.
Sure. All right. The other question, I'm not sure you're going to answer, but I want you to answer it anyway.
All right.
There are, you know, clearly, I don't know if you've heard, but Denver's fans have got a 22,000-plus now petition, online petition, to keep Phil Simms from ever calling another game at Mile High Stadium because they think he's way too biased against the Broncos. Now, you and I know that will never happen, so I think the whole thing is kind of, you know, silly, really. But at the same time, have you
that's
seen?
Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You think that that's really going to matter?
You can
get 22 million signatures, and it's still not going
to
matter.
I'll guarantee. I would be willing to go out and say. I would be willing almost to guarantee that if you had Phil Simms and Jim Nantz on a broadcast of Broncos, Patriots, and they just might have the game later this year when CBS calls it.
No kidding.
You'll find as many fans who are Patriot fans who believe they're biased toward the Broncos as you will Bronco fans who believe that there is a bias toward the Patriots.
Patriots, of course. So as your tenure has unfolded here, have you noticed an announcer or an analyst in particular somewhere, even a play-by-play guy, who you feel might be a little slanted against New England or slanted, let's say, for a particular team?
On the national level?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the guys who call the games, no. No. I mean, maybe there are some who have a history. You know, people, for example, will look at Marshall Faulk. I mean, that's the you know, exhibit A when it comes to the analyst, so to speak, but he's not a game broadcaster. You know, and maybe there is some resentment still that he harbors, but you don't get that from other players, I think. In with regards to the game broadcast, you know, I firmly believe that when you come in as a national broadcaster, all you want is a great game to call. You want an exciting game to call.
Yeah, of course. Of course. All right. What you got coming up next? Anything good?
Yeah, I think so. We're going to have Michael Ho'omanawanui
Nice.
One of the Patriots, of course, a tight end.
It's a good job in the pronouncing, by the way.
I do my best.
Too many people wuss out and say, who, man? You
know? I do that most frequently during the game. Tom Flores, two-time Super Bowl winning head coach of the Oakland Raiders, will be with us as well.
Nice.
Now the longtime color analyst for the Raiders. And we'll talk with Scott Zolak and Jackie Britton and have hopefully some emails and calls.
Good stuff. Bob Sosi Show coming up next. Kevin, thank you. Same Pats time, same Pats channel. Manana in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.